I would like to introduce now the speakers. How we selected the speakers? They come from academia, industry, and of course government. But all of them have a belief in big data because this is the era of big data and education. And a lot of them are pioneers in data science, which is one of the major data science and systems and distributed systems, which is at the mainstay now where computer science is growing. You know about smart cities, etc. So I'm going to start with Professor Gross. Okay, so let me announce. Are you going to use your name? Okay. Professor Gross is the Assistant Director of the National Science Foundation, and he's leading the Director for Computer Information Science and Engineering, basically all the engineering computer science programs. And his mission is to uphold the nation's leadership in scientific discovery and engineering innovation. He's on leave from the University of Massachusetts Amherst, one of great computer science departments, where he served as distinguished professor at the School of Computer Science since 2004. His research interests include network protocols and architecture, network measurement, sensor networks, multimedia communication and modeling, and performance evaluation. And as I said, he's one of the pioneers in this area as well, not just leading in a sense. So,
thanks.
Speakers except that one works. So if we move over this way, you'll hear better.
That's good. Good. Technology. We'll be good in just a second. Often joke how many PhDs does it take to actually get a PowerPoint presentation up? Great. Ready to go. So thanks. I'm really incredibly happy to be here. I have many friends over the years. I have many friends and colleagues and actually collaborators here at Rutgers. So it's really very nice to come and help you celebrate your 50th anniversary, your 50th birthday at the University of Massachusetts. Actually, I noticed our numbers track yours almost exactly. And we also had our 50th birthday or anniversary, I guess about 2 years ago, which was a wonderful thing. So before I get started and talk about what this is actually what I really wanted to talk about. I wanted to say happy birthday to you all, but even more than that, I wanted to say congratulations, right? Because as you look around and you look at the history that's in that booklet there, you know, you should all be incredibly proud of what you've built here, right? You've got a world-class computer science department, outstanding research, awesome students, and a great educational program that's very forward-looking. And so congratulations to all of you. And you know, so now as someone who's sort of a senior member of my department, I will tell you that I'm particularly appreciative to the folks who founded my department and sort of helped us get started in the 70s and 80s on a growth path to what we've become at UMass, and I think what you folks have become at Rutgers here. So for those of you who put in the blood, sweat, and tears, the previous three chairs that Dimitri mentioned, and those of you who helped found the department, congratulations. Well, congratulations to everybody. Special congratulations to you folks. I hope you look at what's around and take great pride on what's been built here, because it's really phenomenal. Okay, so I wanted to talk just pretty quickly about the field of computer science, a little bit about NSF, and then, like Dimitri, looking forward at some of the things, some of the ideas looking forward. I'm a professor at the University of Massachusetts. I'm down in Washington, D.C., leading the SCIES Directorate for a few years. And sometimes I feel like Forrest Gump. I don't know if you feel like that as a computer scientist. Maybe you have to be of a certain age to have gone into computer science when people didn't even know what it was, or maybe there wasn't even a department to go into, right? You just did it because you loved it, right? right? And so I look around in DC, for example, and I've got up here this notion of White House national priority. So I will say one of the absolute coolest things about being in computer science is to know that you're at the center. Dimitri said this, right? You know, think of yourselves as computer scientists. We're at the center of so many things that are happening on our campuses and really across the country here. So what I've shown you here is if you go back about a year ago, there were three national initiatives, and I know folks here participated in these, through the Office of Science and Technology Policy and the White House, all of government agencies coming together and saying, these are national priorities for us. And so you see there the Big Data R&D Initiative, and I know a lot of folks here are involved with that, the National Robotics Initiative, and the Understanding the Brain, which is sort of the newest of those initiatives. Those were here about a year ago. In the last year, it's been sort of an amazing, really amazing time, right? So now, since summer of last year, four new national initiatives, the National Strategic Computing Initiative, the Smart and Connected, the administration says smart cities and size, we say smart and connected communities, it's more open and welcoming and, well, sorry, I shouldn't say that. And I'm being recorded. the Computer Science for All initiative, which I want to talk about, and an Advanced Wireless initiative that actually a number of people here at Rutgers were really seminal in some of the background work for there. And I'm not going to go through all of those. I do want to talk about Computer Science for All a little bit later, but it's an incredibly exciting time to find our field at the center of so many things that are important at a national scale. I saw your statistics of the number of majors that you have, and they actually mirror what's happening around the country. I thought you might be interested in seeing this. This is a pie chart from the Bureau of Labor Statistics saying, where are the STEM jobs going to be across all of STEM in the 2014-2024 timeframe? And that big, the numbers are probably a little bit too small for you to see, but that big blue thing over there on the left, on the right-hand side, that's computer occupations, that's 56%. You see engineering there in red, and then you see the other physical and life sciences. And so this is clearly one of the reasons that we're seeing this really phenomenal growth in our undergraduate programs, is sort of the intense, you know, all of the opportunities for our graduates to go out and do amazing things. This is a statistic that I thought you might like to see from, this comes from the Talby survey, which some of you may know about. It's most of the computer science department chairs from the major research universities in North America and Canada. So that's looking at that segment and showing the number of newly declared undergraduate computer science, computer engineering majors. And you know, this is what you're all living through right now, the intense undergraduate interest in our classes. And actually, this is just showing majors, but I imagine you're having a lot of students coming in as minors. You're having students come in at the graduate level and the senior level from other disciplines to take your machine learning course and data science courses as well. So I feel like we're at the center of a lot of exciting things, not just in research, but also from education as well. Okay, I want to show you one of my favorite, anybody here like a fan of Tufte, the guy who wrote the book on quantitative display of, a visual display of quantitative information? I'm going to show you one of my favorite graphics in the world here, over there on the right-hand side. And actually, I use this a lot when I'm in DC and I go talk to Hill staffers or members of Congress or other folks. And what this is talking about is, you know, one of the definition of what the National Science Foundation is all about, yes, we're all about funding basic research, but it's also about economic competitiveness, it's about health, it's about other things. So the graphic I'm going to show you over here, I'm just curious, how many people have heard of the tire tracks diagram? One, two, three, four. Oh, wow, okay. I gave a talk last week and not a single person raised their hand, so you're way ahead of the curve here with 10 maybe. Okay, but let me show you, this is the tire track diagram over here. And what this talks about is something, you know, it's very disciplinary specific. It's talking about the interactions that we have from a research standpoint between what happens in academia and federal funding, of course, is obviously an important part of that, and industry. So as we always teach our students when we put anything up, explain what the axes are, right? So going up is time, you can probably see that well. There are two things going up there. Let's take the right-hand side. It says on the bottom, you can't see it, networking. But what this is showing is basically a 40 to 50 year history of networking research. And you see three different colored lines going up. There's a red line, so that's academic, that's research going on in universities. There's a blue line, that's research going on in industry. And there's a green line, the thin green line is when it's a $1 billion industry, and the fat green line is when it becomes a $10 billion industry. So in the networking area, you see, okay, you know, research going on in universities starting in the 1970s, catching on in industry. I wish I had money then to invest in companies. I'd be really rich now if I was doing that rather than being a researcher. But you know, it picks up in industry, you see when it becomes a $1 billion market. Actually, the most important thing, and the real take-home message here, are those little black arrows moving back and forth, right? Those are examples of people, of papers, of software, of ideas that transition back and forth between academia and industry. And this is something that really is unique to what happens here in the United States. And so every one of those arrows, and there's one for software, and there's a bunch of others, I'll show you those in a second. Every one of those is a documented case where, this is from a National Academy study, where that group said, hey, this was an important event, something moving over here and then back and forth. And this continues on through today. So you're not supposed to look at that, or you're supposed to look at that and say, ugh. What that is that's just showing that this happens again and again and again across different parts of computer science, and there are companies that have been formed up at the top. If you're interested in reading this, if you were to just, actually I've learned not to use company names for search. So search on Tire Tracks and National Academy and computers, you'll find the reporter. I'd be happy to send it to you. So when you see something like this, you know, it ends in 2010, and so I'm a networking person, and you know, one of the things that you find very quickly after about 5 years, you have your field has some great things going on, and then people say, what have you done for me recently? Right? And for a while in the 90s, we could say internet, networking. People say, oh, internet, we got you the internet. And about 2000, people started saying, ah, that's old, you know? What have you done for me recently? And you could ask that about computer science. And so I thought you might be interested in this. This is a graphic from a report from McKinsey, sort of a consulting firm, that was looking at this question of what are the top 12 economically disruptive technologies between now and 2025. And you can see what they are there. You can see mobile internet, knowledge work, you'll see Internet of Things, you'll see, I can't even read all of them from over here, you see energy. And you might look at those and think, oh, those are the top 12 technologies that are related to computing, because there's computing in every single one of those, right? That's across every single technology sector in the United States. And so I think even though this is sort of, up through 2010, we've done wonderful things, this talks about looking forward. Another thing about looking forward, you know, if you just look at a couple of the things that have happened in the last, 5 years that have really sort of been major technology changes, obviously the rise of machine learning, you can't look at the New York Times or any paper without reading about this. There's a new AI R&D strategic plan that just came out. I'll talk about that just a little bit later. Software-defined networking. I mean, these are really, really big industries, and the foundations for those are in our academic communities and people and people here, actually, as it turns out. So when people say, what have you done for me recently? I love that question because it's like a softball. I could hit that one out of the park, right? Because there are so many good things going on here. So I mentioned the AI R&D strategic plan. I just want to say again, Dimitri was talking about how computer science is becoming the center of a modern 21st century university. And we feel that in government too, I should say. And so there were three R&D strategic plans for all of government that was sort of led out of an organization called NITRE, Networking and Information Technology R&D. It's a group that I co-chair, but size and NSF really play a leadership role there, sort of across all of the pieces of that. And there were three strategic plans that came out of that, one in privacy, one in cybersecurity, and one in artificial intelligence that the president just announced a week and a half ago at the Frontiers Conference in Pittsburgh. So you might want to take a look at those. Those are sort of clarion calls saying the government, it's really important to be stepping up because these are just, again, naturally so important to us. Okay, so let me just say that it really is an amazing time, an exciting time to be in computer and information science and engineering. I'll just tell you a little story. As Dimitri was saying, on campus sometimes you can feel like, oh, you're at the center of what's happening in your entire university. And so I was meeting with my chancellor when we were making the case for the kind of hires and investments that your administration is making in you. Right? So I was actually sitting one-on-one with our chancellor, and the chancellor, looks across and he says, everybody I talk to feels that what they're doing is at the center of the most important thing in the entire universe. And I just looked at him and I said, yeah, but with computer science, it's really, really true, right? And, he invested in us the same way your administration is investing in you. So I like to think that he really understood that and got it. All right, so I want to move on. I want to tell you a little bit about size and NSF and then I want to talk a little bit about the future. But actually, maybe before I do that, I know we have microphones for questions. I've only been at NSF for 2 years. I've been a faculty member for 32 years. So I'm much more used to being a teacher than a research administrator. So, and the worst thing, right, is just for somebody to get up and drone and drone and drone. So let me stop here to say, any comments or questions or observations, anything on what I said that you wanted to hear more about, something that struck you? We got a microphone here. You know how it's a bedtime, Mutu, thank you.
Do you sense that at NSF, as well as other sciences, see computer science in a pivotal the way you're building computer art in the ocean?
Sorry, say that again.
My question is, we are making an argument about how computer science is pivotal and central in academic discipline. Do you see that same perspective among sciences and other larger organizations within NSF?
That's a great question, and I'll answer that with a story. So Mutu's question was, here at a university, we're talking about computer science size being so important for a modern 21st century university, and the question was, do we see that at NSF also? So I'll answer that. The answer is yes, absolutely, right? I'm going to talk a little bit later about the six big ideas at NSF, and when I tell you what they are, you'll say, oh yeah, computing is central to all of those. But I'm going to tell you a story about our director. I used to be on the size advisory about me. I met our director when she first showed up, long before I actually showed up there, a bit before. And she came to our size advisory committee and told us a story that answered exactly Mutu's question here. She said, I was a chancellor at UC Riverside. I was president of Purdue, or chancellor of Purdue, I can't remember what it was. And at each of my previous jobs, I had to learn something new because it was so critical. And when I was at Riverside, I had to learn about medical schools because Riverside did the first medical school campus in the Cal system in 50 years while she was there. So when I came to Purdue, I had to learn about agriculture. When I came to NSF, I've had to learn about computer science because I understand how central it is to everything we did. And so all of us on the advisory committee just sort of fell backwards off our chairs. Yes. So we really do see that. And when I talk about the big ideas, I think you'll see that in sort of a deeper technical thing. Any other comments or questions anybody wants to make? All right. So let me move on. I want to talk a little bit about NSF and size and just sort of give you a little bit of background. I should say that, you ask many faculty here, if you ask faculty members, what does NSF do? They say, fund my research. Hopefully fund my research. That's the way I always looked at NSF too. But we also have a mission, and this sort of gets back to what I was saying before about those tire track diagrams, right? To advance the national health, prosperity and welfare and secure the national defense. So you see that actually in those tire track diagrams. You see it in the fact that research in cybersecurity, in privacy, in AI, for instance, those are just the three strategic R&D initiatives that came out, or R&D reports that came out this year, that at NSF we really have a very, very broad mission. I should have taken this out, sorry. This is just to tell you, at least an org chart, right? Org charts are always horrible to see, but maybe the only thing that you really need to know is, are the kinds of things that, that are part of the size portfolio and umbrella. We divide ourselves into four different divisions. There's a division of advanced cyber infrastructure. This is actually, to get to Mucha's question again, this actually serves a cross-foundation role. So these are all of the capabilities, like Manisha's work and others, that where the cyber infrastructure that we need to power the discoveries. And when we say cyber infrastructure, we don't just mean big iron, right? We mean absolutely computation, but data resources, networking, software, and people, the people that really need to make that run. And so those, you see actually the breakdown there of the different pieces of ACI. We have a division that is on computing and communication foundations. This is where computer science theory, architecture, hardware and software are. There's computer and network systems, where computer and network systems actually are, and then workforces there administratively. I'll talk about that. And then this is actually the area that we're seeing the most growth in terms of proposals coming in and activities and initiatives. Information and intelligence systems, this is where artificial intelligence, machine learning, natural language processing, robotics, robust intelligence, and cyberhuman systems is as well. So that's how we organize ourselves. Here's just an infographic, just to tell you a little bit about ourselves. So our budget in 2015 was $933 million. Since I'm here and with academics, that orange bubble there that says 23% will be of interest to you. That's the average success rate, or the average award rate of proposals that are submitted to SIZE. It takes out like workshops and EAGERs and things that just generally get funded. Some of these are higher, so we're making in SIZE, we have made career awards, the new CRII, SIZE Research Initiation Initiative Awards. We've made those priorities, and those tend to have slightly higher funding rates, and then there are others with lower funding rates. But 23% is what it is. I saw Barbara over there go, and Barbara and I are of the same vintage, and we remember when those success rates actually used to be, we used to be up around 30%. Yeah. So I could talk a little bit more about that, maybe about that later. And then on the right, far right-hand side, you just see, you know, in the end, it is all about the people, right? 7,300 researchers, 6,400 graduate students, and a large number of undergraduates who get research experiences through things like REEs. Okay, money should not be, well, budgets like this are probably not of too much interest to folks, but, you know, as taxpayers and as members of our science community, you should just know what the NSF budget looks like, right? And this is what the NSF budget looks like since 2010. It's divided across the different divisions. That probably doesn't make that much, it's not that important. But what you see is, you know, I like to be an optimist, so I say modest growth, right? We'd like to see a doubling of the NSF budget, and we're working hard for that, but this is sort of the reality, you know, a doubling over an appropriate period of time. But this is the reality of what our budgets have looked like over the past 7 years. This is a really interesting number. It's a number that keeps me up at night. I always like to ask people, what is it that you worry about and what keeps you up at night? The number that keeps me up at night is that number 82% in the bottom right-hand corner. What this graphic is showing you is, think of all federal funding coming in for basic research in a discipline like computer science, and say, what fraction of that actually comes in through the National Science Foundation? Computer science, and again, this is for basic research, 82% of federal investment is coming through the National Science Foundation. Something I'm working really hard on is to make the pie bigger, and also to make that number go down by partnering with other agencies, right? So, and I'll say a little bit more about that later. Okay, I want to end up here When I went to NSF, because I want to start talking about the field a little bit more. When I went to NSF, the ADs, when we set budget, we all get together, we have a retreat. And the NSF director said to each of us, okay, well, before we start the retreat, I want each of you to tell me about your directorate, what it's doing, and where it's going, and you can do it with only one slide. So I want to show you my one slide about all of computer science and where we are and where we're going, okay? And of course, with just one slide, there's some overlays and things like that, okay? But let me show it to you and you can, okay? So, you know, we always start off, you know, we're disciplined, as Peter mentioned. We're disciplined, we have our foundations, right? But we're also very outward looking. So we have our foundations, and here is how I sort of cast where computer science is going, right? That I said, you know, project yourself ahead to 2030 and turn around and look back from 2015, 2016 to 2030. What is it that changed in computing in that 15-year time horizon? I'm going to show you my answer anyway to what I think will have changed. So if I think about the physicalness of computing, right? Since day one, computing has all been about electrical, and it's been about CMOS, right? That's been the physicalness of how we compute. I think if we look forward, that there'll be alternate physicalnesses of computing. So quantum, I know there are folks here who are working on quantum, molecular computing, optical, nano. So I think the physicalness of computing will continue to shift, right? And this is actually one of the major, one of the five pieces of the National Strategic Computing Initiative, to look on beyond Moore's Law in a number of different ways, but some of them have to do with different physical aspects of computing. Okay, think about systems and platforms, and to me, this is sort of the most obvious one here. And think about what your kids or your grandkids, depending on how old you are, think of, what do you think they're going to think about computing in 2030, okay? So right now you talk to people and they think about, oh, you know, my laptop here, maybe my phone if they're sort of a little forward thinking, or pizza boxes if they've been inside a data center, something like that. But I think that everybody here will agree that the notion of computing in 2030 will finally be realizing Mark Weiser's vision of computing just being embedded all around us, right? It's in the environment, it's in our cars. I mean, it is already in many ways. And so I think the notion of computing being sort of this discrete thing that is in a box just won't happen, because it'll be everywhere in the environment. And there'll be software there. And this is sort of the vision of cyber-physical systems and others. So computing will be embedded all around us. Okay, think about HCI. Some people, bless you, still think about a mouse and things like that, or maybe haptics if they're a little forward looking. Think about how computers are going to be interacting with us as people. And I think this is where we're going to see the biggest change, right? I think this is going to really profoundly impact us as people. So think about assistive technologies, think about smart prosthetics, think about silicon embedded in neural pathways to help the deaf hear, help an unsighted be able to be able to see. Think about computers that have models, or software that has models of the human that they're interacting with, so they understand human emotion, and they can adapt themselves to dealing with, you know, with you on a good day and with you on a bad day as well, right? So I think this will all be happening in the future. And then finally, you know, we do have sort of, if we think about all the applications, and again, this gets back a little bit to Mucho's question, I think we'll see things that have been stovepiped interacting with them more and more. Think about the context of smart cities, and think about, you know, roadways and the quality of the environment and work. And when you have in different stovepipes and you're able to connect them to get that network effect, the value of those systems goes up like n squared, not like the sum of n. And so I think this sort of integration and all the challenges that poses is going to be something really important. So, I don't know, you think that's okay for one slide about where computer science is going? Somebody, thank you for treating that. Okay, great. All right. All right, let me end up here simply by talking. I want to just say a few things about what I think the future is going to look like a little bit more, maybe programmatically, and what's happening a little bit nearer term. Okay, so I mentioned the big ideas. I just want everybody here to know that our director of the NSF at the National Science Board meeting in May put out these notion of 6 big research ideas and some process ideas as well. They were written up in Science, so there's the Science article. My slides, I think, will be posted so you can get the URLs that are embedded in here. But here are the NSF big ideas. And let me focus on the research ones. Harnessing data for 21st science and engineering sounds pretty computing central or centric, or computing is very, very important here. Shaping the human technology frontier, that's what we were just talking about human computing interaction. Understanding the rules of life, predicting phenotype, there's a lot of modeling, there's a lot of computation there. The quantum leap, thinking about the quantum revolution, we mentioned quantum computing here. Navigating the new Arctic, this, when you start digging down into it, a lot of this is about sensing, it's about modeling, it's about gathering data, and computing is really central to that too. And then finally, multi-messenger or multimodal sensing in astrophysics. So think about gravitational waves, optical telescopes, and radio telescopes, right? People who work with these kinds of instruments now will tell you they're basically instruments for taking observations and turning them into data. And then you got to do something with that data, right? And so again, their computing and particularly cyber infrastructure are very, very important. So those are the 6 research ideas. I want to tell you just about 2 of them that I thought would be particularly of interest to folks here. This has to do with harnessing the data revolution. We're starting to formulate what these kinds of things might look like. So there's core research activities that need to happen here. So theoretical foundations, this is interaction between mathematicians, statisticians, theoretical computer scientists. Rebecca and others probably know we have a solicitation out on the street for tripods. I should remember what that's transdisciplinary research. I is in the principles of data science. I think that's what it stands for. Right, but the idea here is to have centers, maybe a little, to have them evolve into things like the math centers that we have here that bring theoretical computer scientists, statisticians, and mathematicians together. There's sort of the systems foundation, that's more of the computer science data piece, so there's question and answering, handling unstructured data, there's the system piece of that, and then there's the domain-specific research. So you're an astronomer, what are you going to do with this? There are educational pathways, and education is going to be very important here, and then finally, the cyber infrastructure ecosystem here, and NSCI ties in here. Just one or 2 slides here on the human technology frontier, looking at the future. We're looking at the future of work here. And so, you know, again, do one of these thought experiments and put yourself, right? Half of you are probably professors, right? What do you think a classroom is gonna look like in 2030, right? What do you think your kids' classrooms are gonna look like? What do you think informal learning environments are going to be? What are the capabilities going to be there? And that's just learning, right? You know, all of us who follow things like IBM is doing with Watson and Jeopardy. I mean, think about knowledge-based workplaces like medicine and law and libraries. What are they going to look like, right? They're not going to just be, you know, a text-based search. You're going to be able to do questions and answers and have cyber help you explore and be able to reason and explain itself and work with a human over vast data trunks. And so I just point out the graphic down at the bottom that in this activity, we envision that there are sort of central research areas that are going to be incredibly important. So artificial intelligence, cyber physical and cyber human systems, education, and close collaboration with the social, behavioral, and economic sciences as well. So just in a quick nutshell, those are the 2 things, those are 2 of the 6 big ideas. I wanted to finish up by talking about partnerships, and I could go all the way around that circle and talk about lots of different partnerships, but I think Peter and your provost both mentioned about how the world is becoming increasingly interconnected. And I think that partnerships, with that happening, no individual institution, no organization is going to do something on their own anymore, right? You're going to have partnerships because there's so many exciting things happening there. So I wanted to let you know that within size, I'll look at three different pieces of partnerships and then we can stop. We have partnerships with industries that we're looking at. So I don't know if you've been following the solicitations that have come out. We've done solicitations with SRC, with Intel, with VMware. These are now NSF solicitations where we partner explicitly with companies. Let me tell you how the Intel one works, for example. So if you're a researcher in wireless networking, for example, one of the solicitations that's open right now, when you can send in a proposal, so we have a solicitation out, you could check a box that says, I want NSF only to see this, and we have our usual merit review process that we do. You can check another box and say, I want Intel to also be able to look at this. So Intel, we do our regular panels. For these solicitations, we will have a team of two or three Intel observers there on the side, and there's all the confidentiality that's associated with the current merit review process. Okay, so now what happens is NSF makes its decisions based on the merit review process that many of you here participate in. Intel also has committed to match the amount of NSF funding, and they make their separate bilateral agreements based on the proposals that came in with folks in industry, in academia, right? And so, you know, to me, very seldom do you get win-win-wins, right? So from an NSF viewpoint, we have technology transfer paths for the research that's happening. You saw that's an important point of our mission. You know, putting on my faculty hat, if I can get funding from the National Science Foundation and industry with my same proposal, that's definitely a win. And from the Intel side, Intel gets to see all of the proposals that are coming in from all of the PIs in an area of interest to them from across the country. And that's a win also. I mean, you might not think about that, but you know, it's hard to know what all the best ideas sort of percolating around out there in the community are. This is an opportunity for industry to sort of to get that view and to decide who they want to partner with. So anyway, I'm very excited about that. I think that's a wonderful thing. I should say also, I don't have it up here, but we announced $100 million platforms for advanced wireless research activity that is starting up now. That's funded 50% by the National Science Foundation from size. That's $50 million over 7 years. And industry is putting in actually a slightly higher amount with that. So another good example of industry NSF partnerships. We have international. I should spend more time on international, but I wanna finish up by talking about education. Okay, how many people here? Sorry to keep asking that. How many people here have heard about Computer Science for All? Wow. Okay, way better. Okay, that's good. So I just want to say a word about Computer Science for All because I feel so proud of what NSF has done here. Right. So what Computer Science for All is. I'll give you some homework, right? This is easy homework. Do a search on President and Computer Science for All. You'll find a video of the President's weekend address, right? And the January 29th one was on Computer Science for All. So it's so cool to listen to your President talk for 10 minutes in the weekly address about how important your field is in education. In your fields. And that's what this is really all about. It's about providing access to high quality, rigorous K-12 education in computer science. And we at NSF are sort of stepping up to the table there. We've committed $120 million jointly between SIZE and our education and human resources directorate over 5 years. And what I'm really proud about is the only reason this is happening is because of the work that our research community has been doing here and our research and education community starting back in 2007 with the Broadening Participation in Computing Alliance. And so again, Computer Science for All, it's about it all, right? That all part is important. It's about access and it's about equity. And so starting back with the BPC Alliances and then the CS10K that a number of you probably know, Jane Cuny, who both of these were her brainchilds, right? And so over the last 7 or 8 years, really helping lead the community and setting the foundations for this national scale initiative. Okay, I wanna finish up by talking, since we have your dean here, I wanted to show, I asked your dean if it was okay if I showed a slide that was sort of directed specifically at him, and he said yes. But this is what we're experiencing, right? I want to talk about computer science education at the university level, and I picked on myself, or my own university, but your number is almost exactly the same as ours in terms of numbers of students and size of faculty and stuff like this. So this is our number of majors, and when I was telling you that when I was talking with my chancellor, this is another chancellor story, right? So we were showing our chancellor these numbers and making the case for more investment. And this is my more recent chancellor, and he's pretty smart, right? He said, I know that computer science things go up and down, and you're currently in an up, but there'll be a down. We had a long discussion about why things are different this time. I mean, you can't go up exponentially fast forever, right? So we will plateau, absolutely, at some point, and maybe even go down, but that's another story, but we're not gonna go down like before. But my chancellor said to me, he says, okay, I know what you want me to think, because I showed him this graph and said, you want me to think that, it's just going to, on average, it's going up and up and up, so we really need to be investing in your department. And I said, well, the latter part of that is right, but I don't fit a linear curve to that. I fit an exponential, and so you should be investing exponentially in us. And he just sort of laughed, we're finding lots and lots of universities across the country investing in their computer science departments, probably speaking not just to the rise in enrollments, but the centrality, again, of our discipline on things happening across campus in research and in education. Okay, so anyway, we have this explosion of interest. You're living that, you know all about that. I guess the last thing I want to say is that, is the undergrad CS program director here? So that's the hero, right? That's the Superman sort of standing up and making things happen with this explosive, anyway. My congratulations to the person doing that, right? Standing up, and so the good news is, I think that schools are coping pretty well with this. And I think the bad news is that, actually, I think there's an even bigger wave and a bigger challenge that we as computer scientists are going to be facing. And I think we're starting to see it already. And this goes back to CS for All, and it goes back to what students will be learning in high school, the breadth of what a computer science, you can do with a computer science degree, a more application-oriented view of what computer science means. So your department, my department, we do great jobs with our undergraduate programs the way they are. But I claim there's a class of students, so we don't want to change those, right? We're doing great things. You're graduating, you've got 1,000 majors, 970-something majors. They will get a great education, and they will go on to the kinds of things that your students are doing now. I do believe there's a large class of students who want to, Dimitri mentioned CS plus X, for example. They want to major in something else, but computing is also going to be central in what they do. Or we're going to get students coming out of high school and saying, I want to do something in robotics, for example. And we don't want to have to say, oh, you want to be a computer science major? Great, take CS1, CS2, discrete math, and up the stovepipe for the first 2 years. We want to be able to say, look, there are all these different pathways through our major, right? And you can take those. And that's going to be the real challenge for us as departments, especially given that we've already got the one tsunami sort of hitting us from the left there. We're going to have this other one coming in from behind us. And so I think that's going to be a big, big challenge for us. Okay, so I'm done, and thank you very much. There were questions, so maybe we won't have questions. I'll be sticking around and be very happy to talk to you. I guess the message I want to leave you with is hopefully clear, right? It is an amazing time to be in computer science. We use the phrase ubiquity in size, ubiquity, engagement, and urgency, right? Computing is everywhere. There are all these different communities that I've talked about that we engage with, and we really feel like we just can't sit and not do something, right? Because there's such urgency and such opportunity in what we're doing. So let me finish up again just by coming back and thank you very much for inviting me. But most of all, I wanted to say congratulations to all of you on everything you've achieved here, and you know, looking at your derivatives and things like that, all going in the right direction, that a lot of great things are ahead for folks here. So again, happy 50th, congratulations. And again, a special thanks to those of you who really helped found this department and get it going and put it on the national map. And I hope you all feel really proud of what you built here. Okay, so with that, thank you, and
maybe one question.
Any questions?
Rebecca. I can hear you, I can also repeat the question.
Okay. So I guess the question is around exactly this, you said at the end, right? So we are successful computer science departments across the country sort of doing what we do, but there's so much more. We could use so many more people and modes and
right.
Involvement. So but I think how do you keep the, what's your thought on how to not lose the success we have
right.
while embracing this broader vision? Is it changing the nature of computer science department, or is it really more about finding those points of collaboration?
Okay, great. I think you answered the question for me, but I'm going to pose the question, and then I'm going to use your answer and elaborate on it. So Rebecca's question had to do with sort of that the challenge of, okay, we're doing great things now, but we've got these challenges ahead. I think especially from a research standpoint, all of the research connections going out, and from an educational standpoint, the X plus CS and all of the opportunities there. And how do we do that? Even though you're adding 14 faculty, that's not going to be enough. It's too bad your dean already left. That's not going to be enough to do all of those things, right? And you can't do all those things alone as a department also. So you really do have to build bridges. And so that's why I think the X plus CS programs, which really try to build bridges between computer science and other departments. I'll point you to what UIUC, University of Illinois, has been doing. I think of all of the programs that I've seen, I really, really like what Robert Barr and folks at UIUC have been doing there. So I do think we have to reach out and we have to build those kinds of bridges. If you're interested in doing that, I will say that at NSF, we have there's a solicitation called RED, Revolutionizing Engineering and Computer Science Departments, and there's a specific bullet and track in there on X plus CS programs, and my guess is, since this is so important to the community, you can expect to sort of see that moving forward, and continuing forward, I should say. So yeah, I think it is all about building those bridges, because we don't have the resources to do it alone, and we don't have the intellectual background to do it alone. We've got to partner with other people.
Okay. Can I comment?
Oh, comment? Yes.
I don't think we would agree anymore, any more on this. So definitely, research is something as Professor Gross saw, something that takes 20 years, right? It's long term, especially in academia. So you won't push a button and all of a sudden change research, right? It's going to be a slow process, but what he's saying is you have to have in mind what's going on. You can't be like an ostrich and just do today's research for another 20 years. You have to evolve. And the successful researchers is what they're doing. But as he's also saying, and as I also said in my talk, it's an ecosystem of CS. It's not by itself. The new science will depend on both CS and the other sciences. And those who are going to be successful in the future are those who can bridge the gap from CS to other sciences. Without, of course, forgetting the core. Cannot forget the core.
I'm glad you made that last caveat that you can't forget the core, because there will be, every department will have people. Not everybody's going to reach out and work across all different disciplines, right? Some people just don't want to do that, right? And they've got their focus on what they're passionate about. Might be more towards something that's going on in the core. The challenge for departments is going to be able to integrate both sort of more core-facing faculty with more outward-facing faculty. If you look at ads, one of the things that still makes me worry a little bit is that I think when we look for young computer scientists, we say, oh, I want somebody in networking, databases, AI. We start enumerating the different core areas, right? And what about the people who are outward-looking? And what are the tenure processes going to be for those people? So I think, again, we do core stuff really great, and we're going to keep doing core stuff really great, and you wouldn't want to be in a department where everybody's outwardly looking, right? So we've got to have some way to balance those two. The challenge is really going to be for those outward-facing people, how the community, how our entire research community interacts with them, how they're funded, what are the funding mechanisms, how they're evaluated. I mean, these are, you know, we face these challenges, they're ongoing challenges. But we're going to face that, I think, even more, and especially inside departments.
Question.
Yes?
I had a question about the growth curve.
Okay. A growth curve, okay.
And I understand where it is, but it's very reactive. It's not very predictable. I was one of the people who lived through the early bubble.
Me too.
And so my question is, there's a lag between the faculty hiring and the student in demand decisions. NSF doing something to address that, getting a more predictive curve so that we can get our faculty sizes aligned with our student demand?
Thank you.
A difficult problem.
Great.
But it's going to hit us again in another 4 or 5 years.
Right. So that's a great question. So, you know, that, first of all, that curve, I have to apologize. I used UMass data because I had UMass data there, right? And so I didn't mean to say it's in any way exemplar. It was data that I have. But the point made was that that data is not very predictive because, well, first of all, you just can't go up, as I mentioned, like that forever. But I think the other question is understanding what the nature of that curve is, because that's going to tell us what the long-term behavior is. And is NSF doing anything? So that's a great one. The answer to that is absolutely yes. So we are funding a National Academy of Science study on the increases in enrollments in undergraduate CS majors to do exactly that, because you really have to dig into institutional data to really understand what the students are doing, what the outcomes have been there. So we have a National Academy study that's ongoing right now. They had a workshop August 20th, I think, of this year. I'll also add that the CRA, the Computing Research Association, also has sort of a sister study that's going on in parallel at the same time, and actually there's a lot of interaction, and there's some common shared people and interaction between there. So I don't know what those answers are going to be, but yes, there's at least two, I think, very important activities going on to answer that question. It's a great question. Yes?
So, along with the last question about maintaining the growth in the computer science field, one of the biggest areas of potential growth I see is the underrepresentation of women in the field.
Right.
And it seems that a large part of the population is being left out of not only computer science, but the STEM field
okay.
in general.
Okay. So great. So the question had to do with underrepresentation, which is among our students and also, you know, in the professoriate as well, right? So it sort of pervades, and not surprisingly, sort of pervades the system. And first of all, let me say a little bit about what we're doing there, and then maybe I can say a few words on what I think is happening sort of today as opposed to even a year or two ago. So certainly, I mean, the computer science for all, the broadening participation in computing, there's an activity, one of the big process ideas at the NSF and the big ideas is a program called INCLUDES. It's the hardest acronym I've ever. So Nation of Community and Learners Underrepresented CLU Discoverers in Engineering and Science. So it's our director has a particular passion for that. And so the first INCLUDES solicitation went out, and there are, I think, order 40 awards that had been made to really work at addressing these at a more systematic and community level as opposed to, I mean, actually it's a little bit like the size model, right? So the BPCs, the alliances, this notion that we need to have networks of people and organizations working together. So I think, and you know, we see that in our discipline. We see not-for-profits like code.org and many and the other nonprofits, we see companies sort of stepping in, and NSF is too, through things like CS for All, the All Part, through the broadening participation, through Includes. Having said that, the one other thing I'll leave you with is I think that the kinds of educational opportunities we offer play a very important role there. So I didn't get a chance to talk about computer science principles in the new AP exam, but at the high school level, what's been happening is we've always had our CSA exam, which is problem solving in Java. I don't actually know what the language is, but it's sort of our, you know, sort of the traditional CSA AP exam that we've had. Starting in about 2007, there was a group that got together, sort of funded by the National Science Foundation, also funded the College Board, to work on this, to develop an AP exam on computer science principles. And that, historically, has tended to draw a much more diverse audience in. So Dan Garcia at Berkeley teaches the beauty and joy of computing, right? So that's sort of under this framework of computer science principles. And in that course at Berkeley, there's actually more women in that course than there are men. So I think we're seeing the beginnings, and we're working hard to get the data to show this, right? So we can be quantitative about this, that in some of the intro courses, you know, the story about computer science is the most popular major among women at Stanford, for example, that we're beginning to see, I think, the beginnings of really being able to not address, because we've been addressing this all along, but I think that we're seeing the results of some of that. So I'm hopeful, and it's a great question, and I think, you know, what we're working on right now is getting the data to actually support what's been happening just over the last year or two in particular.